This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Callum McSwiggan on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back to the Callum McSwiggan Show. Today, I am joined by one of the most enthusiastically wonderful people I have ever had the pleasure of meeting. It is the beautiful, the gorgeous Alex Fox.
Thank you very much for that exuberant intro.
Exuberant.
I was going to say to you, did you realise that your name isn't, if you rearrange the letters, it makes like a French ejaculation.
I was going to say Spanish.
Oh, also, an intercontinental even,
yeah.
Ejaculation. So, I mean, I was already extremely enthusiastic about you, but now I know that your name basically translates to jizz.
Jizz.
Yeah, we're joined at the hip.
What does
and
your...
And just the tip.
If we juggle the letters around in your name, what can we make? I'm sure we can make all kinds of...
If you knock off the A, it just turns into licks, which is something I do whenever I'm given the chance. But it does rhyme quite neatly with Alex Fox rhymes with Phallix Cox.
That's a beautiful thing.
That was a nickname given to me by my friend Suze, which rhymes with ooze, about 20 years ago, and it has adhered to me ever since.
Beautiful.
Like spunk. We've got this show off to a really good start, haven't we? Where I've mostly just talked about semen. So
well. Speaking of semen, while we're on the topic of semen,
I'm always on the topic of semen.
you have your fingers in an awful lot of pies.
All sorts of things. Yeah,
I'm everywhere.
Like, I'm like a clumsy Greg's the baker.
Yeah.
I guess lots of people who listen to FUBAR won't know who I am, which is probably a good thing in their lives.
I mean, they should know who you are. I'd be disappointed if they didn't.
Some days I don't know who I am, Colin. But on my resume, it says that I'm a broadcaster, journalist and a sex educator.
I like it.
So I spend most of my days up to my elbow in writing about other people's genitals.
Sure.
So my job involves being an ambassador for a young people's sexual health service called Brooke. Whey!
I love Brooke. Shout out to Brooke.
Exactly. Love. Arms in the air for Brooke. That's in the air, not in anywhere else. I write about about sex and relationships for loads of different magazines, Cosmo, Vogue, The Guardian.
Mm.
And also The Sun, now and again. I think sometimes Sun readers need their good sex ed more than Guardian.
Yeah,
readers.
Yeah.
What else do I do? I've got a show about to start with the wonderful Riyadh.
Riyadh called Unexpected Fluids.
Do you know it was originally called, I think it had a working title of something like The Sexed Podcast, but we thought that was ironically a bit dry.
A bit dry.
Yeah.
You need to moisten that up. A bit of lubrication to slip it in.
Precisely. Yeah. And in our first pilot, which was just me and Riyadh pissing around in a studio, the phrase Unexpected Fluids was born.
Came up and, yeah. And here you go. And how is that going?
Well, it goes full throttle.
Yeah.
As of the 14th of May, I think. So we've only recorded one episode so far.
Okay.
We recorded way more than we need to. It's going to be a podcast. It will broadcast at 3 a.m. on a Wednesday. So it'll just be insomniacs, Uber drivers, and my dad.
And
listening.
Me. I'll be listening.
But yeah, it's also going to be downloadable as a podcast, which I think is how most people will consume it.
Yeah.
We just recorded this first episode. I think we're in the studio for something like 2.5 hours. Mm. But that's all going to get nicely
condensed,
squozen and squidged and squashed down to a lovely, juicy 20 minutes or so. So short, sharp. We want to make it really full of laughs. It's a bit of a divergence from the norm for me because I got my start, as you may know, working for a magazine called Bizarre,
yeah,
which does all the weird, wild and wonderful stuff. And for a long time, life was very hedonistic and about people with vomit fetishes and underwater bondage and shagging in graveyards.
Underwater bondage?
Yeah.
Just going to need to stop you on that one. But how does that even work? Like,
it's like an X-rated version of Splash.
Right.
I met this incredible Japanese bondage specialist,
yes,
called S&M.
Okay.
Well, actually, his real name is Bruce.
Sure.
But he goes by S&M. He is the UK's leading expert on shibari. The proper term is. Now, when most people think bondage, they think a little bit of gaffer tape round the wrists or, you know, bob down B&Q and get yourself a few cable ties, 50 Shades style.
Yeah.
I should say that's highly, highly dangerous. Please do not tie anyone up with cable ties.
Because they'll tear into your wrists,
yeah,
quite badly,
yeah, they're very,
they?
Very
yeah,
sharp. And also, they're quite difficult to get out of in a hurry,
sure,
if you don't have scissors. And often, if people do need to get out of things in a hurry, using a blade is
it's a bad idea.
Yeah,
yeah.
But shibari is really artistic. It's as much about restraining a person as creating beautiful flowing shapes on their,
wow,
body with,
okay,
ropes.
Yeah.
And you can suspend them from things, from the ceiling, from bedposts.
Yeah.
It's really, really stunning, but it's also a very practiced, studied, acquired skill. So S&M is the leading guy in the UK who knows how to get naughty and naughty.
Naughty.
Yeah. And I interviewed him a few times for magazines and I said, Bruce, you've tied up and tied down more people than I can only think of. Who's that Australian dodgy dude who sang about kangaroos and drew cartoons and did timey kangaroo dance?
I have absolutely no idea.
Rolf Harris?
Oh, Rolf!
Rolf. I've made a weird connection now between Rolf Harris and S&M. That is not... Those two have nothing in common.
I've seen some of these, like... And you're right, it is like art. I've seen some,
yeah,
of these people where they've been tied up and, like, the way... The intricacy of the knots and the way they're tied and their bodies are in all these different kind of majestic shapes. And I'm always like... This is a real, real skill.
It's knockout. It's really,
yeah,
stunning. Well, I said to him, like, the slick line that I completely and utterly fudged and fucked up just there. I was trying to say, you've tied up and tied down more people than Rolf Harris has kangaroos in a sporting fashion. S&M. He's consulted on bondage-inspired catwalk fashion. He's,
yeah,
he's worked with really top photographers. I think he's done some stuff on some Hollywood movies. What is your ultimate goal, or what do you wish for? What's the one bondage-related exercise that you've never managed,
yeah,
to fulfill, your kinky bondage dream? And he said, well, I'm actually a keen diver, and I would really love to tie somebody up underwater.
Wow.
And I'd got my PADI certificate, and I'd done a little bit of diving in when I was abroad in Thailand.
Did you let him tie you up underwater?
Yes.
Is that what you did?
Yes, I did. How we got the insurance for that, I do not know.
My God.
I told my mum afterwards, Callum.
Yeah. You don't tell mum beforehand.
No.
She'd be a worry.
Well, one of us or both of us would be dead. She either would have swooned herself through fear or killed me for putting her through it. But it was a really funny day. It took a lot of work to make it happen because we had.
So
to
you
find...
had to, you had like breathing apparatus and things. Presumably, you weren't holding your breath.
Actually, I was. What happened was, first of all, we had to find a pool. We phoned around loads of leisure centres and we said, "Oh, we're doing an artistic magazine shoot. Can we hire out your pool?" The yeses soon turned into no ways when people clocked that the artistic shoot involved a lady dressed up as a mermaid being tied up with rope in the deep end. But we finally found a country mansion that had a pool in the back garden. And this was the site of lots of swingers parties.
Oh, nice. So they were on board.
They were already very open-minded and their pool was used to having far more full-on things go on and probably far more questionable fluids in there than we ever introduced to that chlorinated water. So we found our location. We then had to find a photographer who was suitably qualified to do the dive, but also, again, willing to document that kind of stuff. And most importantly, I had to find a dive buddy because the plan for me was that I was going to be wearing a mermaid suit with a tail. So my legs were already held together.
Yeah.
We put lead weights in the tail as well.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then I would have a buddy whose tanks would have two tubes coming out of them instead of one. Buy one, get one free on oxygen.
Sure.
So he would have a respirator for himself and he'd also have air for me.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to find somebody who was responsible enough to be cool with keeping me alive, but also into this whole concept. The guy we did find actually was really, really lovely, but he was clearly into the kinky side. And there were a few worrying moments where he kind of forgot to give me
air.
He was getting so turned on by the whole shebang.
Oh my gosh! I can see that being erotic in a way. That whole, like, you know, this is your breathing. It's your most basic thing you need to live. And him having that kind of control over you in a consensual manner is incredibly erotic. I can see myself like finding that really, really hot.
It's the ultimate submission.
Yeah.
Your life is literally in somebody else's hands.
Yeah.
And for S&M as well, there was the added challenge of actually doing the tying underwater.
Yeah.
He performed all the bondage rope work under the water.
Yeah.
It was actually, I think he's a perfectionist.
Sure.
And he was actually quite critical of his work because the rope, he uses Hessian rope. Or I think it's Hessian or made of hemp. It's fabric.
Yeah.
Once it got wet, it behaved differently because it swelled up. So
sure.
He was finding it harder to tie the knots. But long story short, we did do it. The photographs were amazing. I think the least erotic part of the day was when I had to announce to a photographer and two divers that I needed to have a wee, and I just had to let it all flow.
Well, of course. I mean, what are you going to do? They can't untie you.
They can't untie me, unwrap me and get me in the house fast enough. So weirdly, they all got out of the pool and stood on the side, and that sort of made it worse because then I really felt like I had an audience.
Performing.
You know? Yeah, but it was incredible.
So how long were you under the water for? How long were you having to, like, be under the water and like holding your breath or waiting for the like the breathing apparatus?
Well, we started off with me wearing the breathing surrogate breathing apparatus for while I was being tied up. Then we practiced with my dive buddy taking it away, and because I couldn't speak underwater because I was holding my breath and because the sound didn't carry reliably enough, we had two signals. I couldn't move my hands because they were tied behind my back.
This sounds terrifying.
So, weirdly, I look back on it, I realised quite how much my existence was in jeopardy. But at the time, I felt surreally serene and very, very calm. I'm quite happy underwater.
Yeah.
There was one moment where the signals that we devised were I would nod my head for when I wanted air. And I had to time that because it took a while for my buddy to swim over. He was swimming out the way, so we got a clear shot with a photographer. So I had to time my giving of the signal to say I needed oxygen to allow him to get over and fit the mask on my face and everything. And then we had a second signal, which was me shaking my head from side to side. And that meant, get me out now is
right,
a problem.
Okay.
I only had to use that once. And that was when Bruce was behind me tying my arms.
Yeah.
And he accidentally pulled my shoulder.
Ooh.
And it just jerked my the breathing device slightly out of my mouth. And thankfully, I was breathing out at the time. But had I been breathing in,
I would have
inhaled water.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was all A-okay. I lived to tell the tale. I think my mum's probably lost at least 15.75 years off her life from that one. But you know what? It was a lot. That was many, many years ago.
Yeah.
I did that back in my bizarre days. I'm still telling the story, and I still think that not many people have done that.
Yeah.
But my career now is. I still do some extreme things, but I'm vaguely more grown up and responsible now.
I don't think irresponsibility wouldn't be the word I would use, Alex. Adventurous, playful, out there. You know,
absurd.
yeah, absolutely. All right, let's have a little bit of music, and then we'll chat a bit more about all the weird and wonderful things you get up to.
I have so many squelchy subjects to discuss with you.
Baby, don't make me spell it out for ya. All of the feelings that I got for ya can't be explained, but I can try for ya. Yeah, baby, don't make me spell it out for ya. You keep on asking me the same questions.
Why?
And second guessing all my intentions. Should know by the way I use my compression that you got the answers to my confessions. It's like I'm powerful with a little bit of tender and emotional sexual bender. Mess me up, yeah, but no one does it better. There's nothing better. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way.
So good, so fucking real. Uh-huh. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
You know love is so, please don't stop it.
You got me right here in your jean pocket
right now.
Laying your body on the shag carpet. Ooh. You know I love is so, please don't stop it. It's like I'm
just got a little preview of those pictures we were just talking about there, and you look stunning. And also, like, I love the, it wasn't what I was picturing. I don't know what I was picturing, but I love the, you can really like see the like submissive element there, and like
yeah.
You're so wrapped up and so like restricted, and just putting that trust in somebody else is it's an incredible thing to do, and like I feel like I would kind of like to experiment with that kind of thing.
I think there's more more people doing it now.
Yeah.
In fact, Callum, I will put my investigative hat on and see if I can find out if anyone's up to it and down to it.
Yeah.
It's lovely of you to say those pictures look stunning. I'm pretty sure there are cattle prods out there that are more stunning than that. I think if I did it now, we'd probably make it look more elegant.
Yeah.
But there's something that I like about the rough and readiness of those photos.
Sure.
It was genuinely experimental. And also, my facial expressions in those shots, I don't think are particularly elegant and relaxed, because I was...
There's almost like a hint of... Not fear, but there's something in your eye
which is jeopardy.
Yeah. Is it? Yes.
I was concentrating very, very hard.
But I think that adds to it. It you feel that emotion, you see it in your eye, rather than you being like looking serene and like you're having a great time. You know, this, it's showing in your eyes. You're saying, no, look, that my life is in danger in this situation.
It doesn't look like
point.
A fashion shoot, does it? It
no.
looks like
yeah.
an experimental, raw, real sex game.
Exactly.
What we found out later, by the way, was that the guy who owned the house and the pool had set up a telescope in his loft, and he'd been watching the entire proceedings all day.
Wow.
Yeah. He took us for a tour around the house afterwards, and we clocked this telescope right next to a big industrial-sized vat of Vaseline.
Wow. So you know what he was getting up to.
I'm not sure whether that was a remnant from the swingers parties. I should say, I represent a number of sexual healthcare brands, including One condoms.
So love in One my condoms.
They are brilliant.
Yeah.
But in my capacity as a condom enthusiast and encourager of the use of, I should say, Vaseline and condoms, not a good idea. Please, folks, do not use oil-based lubricants with your latex condoms.
Because they will break them down and they will tear. Yeah, it's
there
not
we go.
Segwayed
from telescopic wonder perverts into a safe sex message.
Yeah,
I am growing up, Callum.
I threw a Halloween party last year.
Ooh.
And
One
condoms like sent me a load of condoms and things for all my guests, which was really nice of them.
That's brilliant.
You know, just because, like, happy Halloween, everyone. So that was really nice.
Have
of them.
A rubber. they're genuinely really good condoms.
Yeah.
I don't think they're that well known in the UK yet. They're quite well established in the States, but a lot of the varieties they do are genuinely quite innovative. Have you heard the ones that they do called the Pleasure Dome?
No.
To me, that sounds like some kind of 80s Mad Max style thing. But they're, for want of a better word, baggier at the end.
Sure.
Trying to sell a baggy condom is, maybe I'm using the wrong word there, a bit, they're roomier around the head of the penis.
Okay.
Which a lot of guys find more
comfortable.
Yeah, and it increases sensation a little bit. So I'm a big fan of the Pleasure Domes.
I think it's really important that people realise that there are different types of condoms out there, and that they are different shapes, they are different sizes. You can have latex-free ones, you have them in different materials, you even have vegan ones.
I was going to say, do you know about vegan
ones?
Yeah,
because there's some kind of, I forget what it is, but there's some kind of
There's a milk protein, casein.
Yeah.
It's used in very low levels as an additive to help make latex smooth.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is problematic if you're vegan.
But they use something from a tree, I believe, instead of that.
Yes, they use milk thistle,
I believe.
Which ironically doesn't have any milk in it. There's a brand called Glide, which are really good.
Yeah.
Glyde.
But I think there's a lot of people out there who just genuinely don't realise that there are different ones available, and I think a lot of people go, oh right, I'm gonna use a condom now, and they're, you know, teenagers or whatever, using a condom for the first time, and maybe they find that it's uncomfortable, even painful in some instances.
Yep.
And it's often because they're using the wrong condom and they're just not aware that they should be experimenting. And you know, you hear guys like, oh, we're talking about like extra large condoms and all that, but the difference between a trim condom, a regular condom, an extra large condom is we're talking millimeters, and it's about
it's
thickness
minor. Yeah, exactly.
Not length.
Yeah. You can get custom fit condoms.
Can you really?
In fact, there used to be a condom company called They Fit. I believe they've been bought by one.
Yeah.
And they're operating in the States, but I think they're going to relaunch that in the UK. Because particularly if you're a guy with unusual proportions, maybe you're like girthier than your average, or a little bit shorter or a little bit longer, or if you have a particularly curved penis, then finding a standard condom to fit and that feels good, it can be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are all sorts of interesting ones out there. There are some that have kind of tattoo designs embossed on them.
I've seen those. Yeah, almost like wearing like a tattoo sleeve, but on your penis. Yeah, I like
ultimate
that.
Ultimate rock and roll.
Have you ever seen those ones? I often see them, like, they're being often sold in men's bathrooms. So perhaps you haven't seen them. but they have, like, really unusual, the tips of them have, like, really unusual kind of bulbous shapes. Ooh. Attached to them. And I guess it's for the receptive partner's pleasure more than the man's. But it's like they have like, oh, it's kind of hard to explain.
Like ticklers on the end.
Yeah, the end is like, it's almost like they're like weird balloon animals at the end. And I see those all the time. And I've never had a
like
had
a circus
try, but
on your phallus.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little.
I got sent one that was, I think it was Russian, I'm not sure. But yeah, it was this bizarre condom that did look like uncomfortably like a children's party entertainer had decorated it, like say like balloon animals. There was a lot going on. It kind of looked like someone had drawn a rooster with a blindfold on. It had kind of like a red, you know, like the little flappy bit underneath a rooster's chin and on the it's called a crown. You know,
I don't know the anatomy of a rooster.
It looked like a roadkill rooster,
sure,
but for your torture.
Yeah.
It was very, very strange. Whether it feels good, I'm not sure.
I feel like I need to have a little experiment, you know, I need to play around a little bit. And again, like, I feel like we go, you know, I spend so much time walking up and down the high street, going in different shops, trying on different pairs of jeans. So, you know, I get the right pair that will get me laid, you know. Got to look cute. And then, you know, you just go, oh, go into Boots or whatever, and you just grab the first box of condoms on the shelf. You know, it doesn't, you spend that much time trying to find a nice pair of jeans that fit. Why would you not spend the same amount of time trying to fit something that's going to fit on your willy?
That is an excellent attitude. I wish more people had that outlook.
Yeah.
Plus, it can be a really fun way, genuinely, to ring the changes.
Sure.
Trying different condoms.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of interesting ones.
Mix things
out
up
there.
And, like, oh my God, there's one like, it's like a tingle one. And I remember using that with my ex, and I did not get along
with
that. They are
very divisive.
I did not get along with that at all. It was making me tingle in all the wrong places. And
tingle
it was,
on your dingle.
It was. I didn't like it at all. Nope. I really, really did not like that. But, you know, some people get off on that. So, you know, good for them. Bit of toothpaste in the mouth, some people like, while giving head.
I have read that tip. I remember reading that a lot in kind of Sugar Magazine and Ms. when I was a teenager. I recall as a younger person trying to go down on someone with an extra strong mint in my mouth. And I think it was, I'm going to put this mildly, I think it was maybe a little bit too much.
Too strong, should have gone for that.
Yeah, dude looked like I'd gone down on him with a blowtorch between my teeth. He was not loving.
Not enjoying it.
I tried this again with the same poor guy. I really tortured his todger. I was trying so hard to be a good lover, but I'd read somewhere that going down on your bloke with a mouthful of champagne was sophisticated and stimulating. But if you ever had a mouthful of really fizzy drink,
it's so funny that you mentioned this, because I kind of did my version of that was less upmarket. For me, it was somebody told me.
Tizer. Blue WKD.
No, it was Dr. Pepper.
What's the worst that can happen? Your schlong falls off.
Yeah, somebody said Dr. Pepper specifically was really good. But, like, just trying to get it in the mouth and then trying to, like, open your mouth.
Coming
to, like,
your nose.
It was all over the place.
Get
was,
busy with the fizzy.
It was unpleasant. Did the champagne work out for you?
No, it hurt him.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's actually quite difficult to keep that in your mouth. And
yeah.
Now, one thing I have found works, and this is probably the most northern sex tip I will ever give. I'm Mancunian. Have a cup of tea by your bed. I mean, I like to go for mint tea because then it gives that slight minty tingle, but without being
not
full
too
on,
intense. Yeah,
it doesn't feel like you know, like the extra strong. But it just warms your mouth and gives a little bit of a bit of a minty tingle without making it feel like you've essentially just fallen phallus first into a field of stinging nettles.
I might give that a go, actually. I don't think I've ever tried like a warm drink, because I've tried the whole ice cube thing, which is quite nice, and I quite like to experiment with that. But I've
Someone once tried to put a Mr. Freeze lolly up my foof.
How did that?
Painful. Have you ever licked a lamppost?
So did it get like stuck to the sides?
It was. It actually. It could have gone worse. But yeah, it felt like there was some kind of amateur cryogenetic experiment happening in my
downstairs
area. Yeah.
What flavour? Just out
orange,
of interest.
I think. Oh. I mean, everyone knows those ones aren't the best. I should have gone for blue raspberry or
cola.
Or cola. Yeah.
There's something about that those specifically those ice lollies, the cola flavour. It has a unique flavour that you can't find
it's
anywhere
the
flavor else.
The flavour of cool, Callum. If you were at school, like high school, unless you had the bubble gum, the blue raspberry, or the cola,
yeah.
You were not cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you were sucking on the lemon or the orange, oh my goodness,
social suicide.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Nobody wants
exactly.
to be seen with the orange, and yet you had it rammed right up there.
When I first started dating at high school, I was actually painfully shy around guys.
You were not. I don't believe that for a second.
I was weirdly quite a big mouth at school, but I was very, very swotty, and I just
sure.
found I was happy being people's friends, but I always found interacting with guys in my teens in a romantic sense excruciatingly mortifying.
Okay.
I dated a guy called Ben, who was one of the school studs for a while. And I spent
nice.
Most of that time wondering when someone was going to reveal that it was all a big joke.
Sure.
And he had a great reputation for being a sexy dude. And he was a sexy dude. He was a gymnast. He could do the splits every which way, which looking back on it, it's kind of worrying for a person with a penis. But hey, but he took to trying to eat ice lollies in the playground in a sexy way to get me to snog him, which wasn't too bad. But then when winter came and the ice lollies were out of the question, he switched to Monster Munch. And I don't know whether...
I love a Monster Munch.
I can't eat them anymore,
Pickled
Macy.
Onion?
It was pickled. Oh. I don't know whether you've ever seen someone's teeth after they've eaten Monster Munch.
How?
Like,
did he think that was sexy?
Yellow bits of claggy maize stuck to his incisors, like his gnashers covered in this bright, yet like Simpsons yellow, chewed up, crisp. Absolutely horrifying. I do apologise, Ben. I thought you were a lovely man.
But the Monster Munch was...
I couldn't deal with the Monster Munch mastication. It was terrifying. I can no longer... I've only just been able to eat Frazzles recently.
You've only just come round to them
again. Yeah, I love a Frazzle, but the trauma was too great.
Well, on that note, let's have a little bit of Troye Sivan.
First met, you said light my cigarette. So I lied to my mom and dad. I jumped the fence and I ran. But we couldn't go very far, cause you locked your keys in your car. So you sat and stared at my lips, and I could already feel your kiss. All nights and daydreams, sugar and smoke rings. I've been a fool for strawberries and cigarettes. Always tastes like you. Headlights on me, racing through 60. I've been a fool for strawberries and cigarettes. Always tastes like blue eyes, black jeans, lighters and candy. I've been a fool for strawberries and cigarettes. Always tastes like you. Remember when you taught me fate? Said it'd all be worth the wait. Like that night in the back of the cab, when your fingers walked in my hand. Next day nothing on my phone, but I can still smell you on my clothes. I was hoping that things had changed, but we went right back to your games.
All nights and daydreams, sugar and smoke rings. I've been a fool for strawberries and cigarettes. Always tastes like you. Headlights on me, racing through 60. I've been a fool for strawberries and cigarettes. Always tastes like blue eyes, black jeans, lighters and candy. I've been a fool for strawberries and cigarettes. Always tastes like you. And even if I run away, give my heart a holiday, still strong.
yeah, they always taste like you. You. Long nights, daydreams, with that sugar and smoke rings, always taste like you.
Red lights,
was a little bit of Strawberries and Cigarettes by Troy Sivan, and I'm a little bit in love with this song at the moment. It only just came out a couple of days ago, and it's from the movie Love, Simon.
I can't wait to see that.
It's such an important movie, and I think just it's about, for anyone that doesn't know, for anyone living under a rock, it's about, you know, a kid in high school coming out and falling in love, and it's as simple as that. And I've seen so many movies out there where There are queer stories being shown. There are queer stories on television. There are queer stories in films. But it's so rare that we see kind of like a happy story. And it's just like, yeah, it's just like watching like a teen romance film. And there's a little bit of tricky situations, but there's no drama and there's no, you know, all that negativity which is so often associated with queer stories. So it's great. And that song is just, it destroys me every time. It comes at a very key part of the movie. It's very emotional, and I've just been like rolling it out on repeat. I'm obsessed.
Well, speaking of rolling, I'm now thinking I want to make a cigarettes-based playlist, because we've got Cigarettes and Strawberries,
yeah,
Cigarettes and Chocolate Milk by Rufus Wainwright. So Ooh. We could even make a queer-linked smoking playlist. I like going obscure with my musical taste.
Let's encourage all the queer kids to smoke.
Oh, maybe,
yeah,
not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
That's a terrible
I'll rethink that
idea.
One. Maybe it can be a lesson. You know?
Yeah.
A warning.
I think it's interesting, the whole like kind of sexualization of smoking throughout the years. Like, it's always been like this because it's quite phallic, I think.
I answer questions I do a podcast called The Modern Man. There's two ends. My co-host is called Ollie Mann. So it's not just for guys. He wanted to make a pun about his name.
Sure.
We're about 7 seasons in now, so we've been going for quite some time, and I do a section on the show called The Foxhole where I answer people's sex and relationship queries. Yeah. And I got a question from a guy who said, my partner really loves watching me smoke. He loves the way my mouth moves. He loves the humiliation of me breathing smoke in his face.
And really?
I think for some people as well, it has that teenage link for them, you know, it was associated with maybe powerful, sexy, older kids who they had a crush on. Sexy kids. I'll rephrase that. I meant, you know.
I knew what you meant.
You know what
you
I meant.
You were a kid
that
as
was,
well.
That, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That was horrifically phrased for me. But yeah, for a lot of people, the fetishization of smoking has roots in a very formative younger experience. And it's, you know, it's all, like you say, it's a phallic object.
Yeah.
It's if you combine it with red lipstick or something like that, it can be a very powerful image. But this writer said to me, I really want to fulfill my partner's kink, but I'm a non-smoker and I don't feel comfortable harming my body so that they can get their kicks.
Sure.
And in the end, we advise, because I've asked a load of dominatrix and dominant friends what they do in that circumstance. And some of them said they use fake cigarettes or cigars like you'd see on a movie.
Yeah.
Lots of them said that they'd switch to vaping, and apparently you can
get... Does that have the same kind of the same kind of sexual appeal with a vape?
It was a compromise. I actually got a letter back from this guy saying, we tried the vaping. It's been a really good way of meeting in the middle, but it did take some getting used to. I think you can get vaping fluids that don't have any nicotine in them, so it's essentially just... It's just flavour, really.
Right, okay,
it's
so it's not damaging
flavor.
Your health.
Yeah, well, not that we know of.
Yeah.
And he said it took a while for his partner to get off on a little glowing fake cigarette.
Yes,
without the kind of traditional smell and the sound of a cigarette, you know, that crisp sort of burning sound, and all the associated rituals of smoking was something that the partner initially missed, but it was a really good solution for them in the end.
And surely you can get like a cigarette that comes without the like tobacco, etc. You can surely that exists.
It does for on stage.
Yeah.
But I don't think that they're that convincing up close.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I've never smoked
Interesting.
Myself.
Interesting.
I am pure.
Well, I really want to know more about you, actually, Alex. So I thought we'd do a little bit of Two Truths, One Lie.
Okay.
So for our lovely listeners at home, Alex is going to read me three facts about herself, and two of them are going to be absolutely true, and one of them is going to be a great big fib.
Well, brace yourself, please. Okay. My first possible truth is, Callum, I once recently spent an evening sending a man pictures of my wide open mouth with little bits of chewed up prawn stuck between my teeth because it turned him on.
Wow.
So not Monster Munch, but prawn.
So wait. So like wide open, like with just, so you've just had a mouthful of prawns, you've chewed them, you've swallowed, but you've got like remnants of prawn still kind of hanging around in your teeth.
Sushi debris. Mm. Yeah.
And this was a guy that you were really into, trying to have sex with. What was the situation here?
I'm not going to divulge.
Sure,
that.
That's fine.
I will when we get round to telling, when I get round to revealing whether it's
okay,
true or false.
Sure.
But I did send a significant number of pictures
of your open
my
mouth.
Open mouth full of bits of food.
Ooh. Okay. Hit me with your next one.
Number two. Someone once gave me an orgasm by just touching my arm after putting me in a hypnotic trance.
Ooh. So like properly put you under, like hypnosis and then...
Hypnotized me.
Yeah.
Put me under and then programmed me so that just touching my arm would make me come.
No. Darren Brown did that to me once. Not to me individually. He did it to me in a room full of people.
Made you come?
Almost.
Darren Brown's a deeply sexy man.
He is a bit of a dad, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a certain something about him. Yeah, I went to see one of his shows and he did this kind of... I can't really explain what it was, but it was like he programmed the audience to every time he kind of lifted his hands in the air and like put all the big lights on for us to feel like this overwhelming sense of happiness.
Ooh.
And while he was doing this, he said, you know, I want you to picture something that makes you really, really happy. And my mind went to sex. And I think that's why it became a sexual thing for me. And so while he was doing it, every time he did this thing with his hands, I literally felt like I was having an orgasm. I wasn't ejaculating, but I felt it in my penis.
Tantric tingles.
Yeah. And yeah, so I can 100% relate to the being put under a trance and then having... it associated, because sex is so mental.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so in our heads. I think it's often more in our head than it is our actual genitals.
And it's in our whole bodies as well. Like our bodies are connected via all sorts of complicated nerve pathways and neural pathways in our brains, as you say. Like, I think too many people just focus on the bullseye of the ball sack or the vulva or, you know, or whatever genitalia, bit of genitalia they're dealing with, and completely forget that the entire body has the capacity for pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes it can really take the pressure off if you remember that you've got an entire playground to frolic in. And
You don't just have to focus down there.
Exactly.
You don't just have to
slide straight onto that roundabout. God, I love an extended metaphor.
I really hope that's true. I really, really hope that
that's
true.
I'm intrigued by your Darren Brown story. I'm now, my science brain is thinking, I wonder if there was a particular type of light that makes you feel naturally euphoric as a human being.
Well, it was quite a long process, and it the whole thing lasted for about 20 minutes, and he was really building it up. So he was saying, okay, now picture the thing, and as I was picturing the thing was when he would put the lights on and he'd have music going, and it was this kind of it built up so that when he did this thing with his hands and the music came on and the lights came on,
a big climax,
and it really went through me. My two housemates were with me, and they sat down afterwards and went, well, that was shit. And
really?
I was there like grasping onto my seat, like my knees had gone weak. I couldn't do anything. And they were like, that didn't work on me. And I was like, bloody well did on me.
I think it would work on me. Have you ever listened to or heard of ASMR videos?
Oh, yeah, I love ASMR.
Of course
ASMR.
You do. You're a YouTuber, yeah. I listen to quite a lot of ASMR before I fall asleep. And I've noticed as well, if I get a very similar effect to that, those ASMR tingles, if I am listening to certain pieces of music
and in the, and the effect is enhanced if I'm moving in time. So if I'm walking in time to a piece of music, this amazing glow starts on the back of my neck and spreads over my shoulders. My ASMR habit has got quite weird lately, though. I've moved from the like the nice like tapping on things and fake spas and giving me facials. I've moved on to this guy called Riyadh's going to think that this sounds really questionable, but there's an Irish guy called Gale Force who does sexy boyfriend fake scenarios, like Irish boyfriend tucking you in for the night. Or
I was watching a guy who did similar, like beautiful boy called Sebastian. I can't remember his YouTube name. And he does like going on a date with a boyfriend ASMR, and he just sits there and very softly talks to you, and you can hear the sound of his lips just very gently kind of...
I'm like, torn on the lip smacking
thing. I love lip smacking. And like you can hear him having, like he has a sip of his wine and then he's just having dinner and like, but like he's got the microphone up in everything. So you hear every little noise and it's just so...
It's such a fascinating art, isn't it?
It's bizarre, ASMR. But I love it.
It is totally weird, and now I'm completely in at the deep end of it. I often listen to a guy called Tony Bomboni.
These great names.
Yeah.
Great names.
He does really bonkers ASMR where he pretends to be an alien or pretends to be like performing an exorcism on you or stuff.
Sure.
I started off with the fairly straightforward stuff, and now I am lost in the outer realms of weird. I often, when I turn my phone on in the morning, I see whatever it was that I happened to fall asleep to, and I think, Christ, no wonder my dreams are fucked
Golly
up.
Golly gosh, yeah.
Do you want to hear my third possible lie or truth? Okay, number three. I own a dildo in the shape of a realistic poo complete with sweet corn nubbins.
Wow. I feel like you definitely do, Alex.
I love that you didn't even question that.
I feel like you don't...
Shit dildo, yeah.
Like, I feel like it's something that you own for fun and perhaps you've used it, but like you weren't like, oh yeah, this is going to get me off. Or maybe you were. It's a tricky one.
The nubbin is designed to stimulate the clitoris.
Which is the sweet corn sticking out.
The sweet corn for your sweet spot.
It's a very niche product to design and market, isn't it?
Well, people do put such things in their niches. It's, I'm gonna make you guess which of these is untrue before I move on.
Sure, because
otherwise I'm gonna give myself away. So, Callum, do you think my lie is that I sent a load of pictures to a guy with my mouth full of chewed up food? Or that someone gave me an orgasm just by touching my arm when I was in a hypnotic trance, or that I own a dildo shaped like a human shit.
If you were anyone else, I would say all three of those things were lies. But because it's you, they all sound very plausible and very true.
God, what is my life?
I feel like they're all true, but you've changed the details slightly in something.
You are a very clever young man.
So I'm going to say that the lie is the... being put under a trance and being made to orgasm from your arm alone. And I feel like something similar happened, but not that exactly.
You get the golden prize.
Yes.
Which is actually a turd-shaped dildo. I haven't experienced an orgasm under hypnosis.
Oh, okay.
I have met people who say they can give hypnogasms, they're called.
Hypnogasm.
It depends how suggestible you are, I think.
Yeah.
But they claim that they can put you in a trance and give you an orgasm, and also that it can be useful to your sex life because they can program you so that your partner can stimulate you in a certain way following that treatment and make your sex life more fulfilling and more satisfying, make it easier for you to climax. I'm skeptical but interested. Mm. I have, however, been hypnotized. I was hypnotized for the first time just last weekend by a guy hilariously called Des O'Connor, but not that Des O'Connor. Hypnotized by Des O'Connor. Life's truly bizarre. It was for a very different reason. It was almost like a guided meditation, really. It was a deep relaxation that was designed to help relieve stress and treat some... I'm becoming very confessional here, I suppose, but I was dealing with some uncomfortable aspects of my early life.
Sure.
I felt like I needed a little bit of support in ways of thinking about those more positively.
Yeah.
And my friend said, oh, you know, I'll give you a mates rate session of hypnosis. And I thought, well, what the hell have I got to lose?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a crock of shit, which may or may not be actually doubling as a dildo, and that it would be maybe unpleasant. It was totally different to what I expected. I felt so relaxed.
Wow.
It was really, really useful to me. And I actually left his Harley Street abode feeling lighter than I had for ages. But that might have just been because I sat down for an hour.
Well, that too, yeah.
But it worked. It worked. It totally changed my mind about hypnosis.
It sounds really interesting. And going back to the hypnogasm, did you call it?
Yeah, I'm now a little bit more willing to believe in the hypnogasm now that I have experienced how pleasant hypnosis can be.
Yes, and I'm all about kind of like we have the ability to kind of manipulate and change the way we think and almost like reprogram ourselves. And I think we are kind of like programmed one way sexually. And, you know, this is how I have sex. This is how I get off. This is how I get my pleasure. And I think just kind of the idea of opening us up and saying, maybe we can move things around here. Maybe we can reprogram this so you experience pleasure in a different way. I think that's entirely possible. Again, I don't know if it works. I've not tried it myself, but I think it definitely sounds plausible to me.
And when you frame it like that,
yeah,
it also sounds like a damn good idea, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not sure that I believe in hypnosis, or I haven't personally experienced hypnosis of that form that you see in kind of Phoenix Nights, back of the pub, Shazam, Mr. Magical, kind of, you know, that sort of thing where some dude in a shiny suit gets someone on stage and then puts them in a trance and makes them behave like a donkey and they remember nothing else afterwards, or gets them to suck off a turd-shaped dildo and they have no clue about it. I'm not sure that someone would be able to put me in that state, but I am now much more open to the idea that reaching a deep state of relaxation and becoming very, very open-minded and aware of your body and really, really blissed out and chilled out, totally think that could help you access new forms of pleasure or be more receptive to the idea that what you're conditioned to believe is sexy, that there's more to it than that. You know, there's more potential.
Well, I've kind of like the whole like pain and pleasure balance and divide. I got really interested in this a couple months back, and I was experimenting with a sexual partner, and I was just trying to almost convince my mind that things that I would usually associate as being painful were actually pleasurable. And actually just kind of really focusing and concentrating, I suddenly felt that actually this is now a pleasurable sensation. Something that you would usually associate as being painful suddenly now became pleasurable just by kind of just thinking about it differently and kind of changing my perspective and my mindset. So I think it's definitely an achievable thing.
That's a really interesting approach to take to it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the science of S&M suggests that if you inflict pain upon somebody, then their body produces a rush of endorphins to counteract that pain. Mm. And it's the endorphins that give you that sort of, because they act as a natural painkiller, they give you that rush, that blissed out. Have you heard the phrase subspace?
I haven't.
Lots of people who are into hardcore S&M say that after being whipped or flogged or whatever it is they're doing, after a certain amount of impact or pain play, they reach a state that they refer to as entering the subspace, where they feel floaty and really kind of dreamy and almost like an out-of-body experience. It's very, I think it's, a lot of people describe it as profoundly relaxing.
Sure.
And that is traditionally attributed to a high level of endorphins rushing through their body. So it's quite a chemical thing. But you saying that you are actually focusing on that same sensation and sort of trying in quite a concentrated way to change the way you feel about it. That's really interesting.
Well, as well, because I feel like you can definitely relax into things. You know, I find like even something as simple as a really tough gym workout, I find if I start like getting myself all like stressed out about it and I'm struggling and I'm feeling the pain and it's like, oh, this is too much. Sometimes just going, no, this is okay. Take a deep breath and relax. Suddenly the pain almost goes away.
Your connection with your body is really well developed.
Oh, well, it's me great. And my body have had quite a lot of time together.
Is your body well connected to anyone else?
It's not. It's never connected to anyone ever.
Well, if you want something to connect it to, I do, in fact, own the turd-shaped dildo. It was sent to me by a lovely company called Uber Kinky. And there, if you want to peruse an interesting website, click on over to that one. My lord. They've got some things that will make your eyebrows shoot right off the top of your forehead.
Wow.
It's for people who are into the idea of scat play, so who want to play with poo, but that's obviously quite a high maintenance act.
Sure,
there's a lot of cleanup. You can't really have a poo based quickie. So if you maybe want to play around with that idea, that symbolism, that concept of humiliation or of taboo, then the turd shaped dildo is a good midpoint. I have to say, it's not really my cup of tea.
No,
I think. Personally, scat play is even further along the line of disgust than Monster Munch. But just because it squicks me out, I can appreciate that
for other people.
Other people, it's compelling and enjoyable.
Cool. Would a poo-shaped dildo kind of do it for somebody who is into scat play, though? Because I feel like the dildo has suddenly become this quite sanitary thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's very disconnected from the kind of like raw kind of, I don't want to say dirty, but that kind of, I feel like that. I don't know, but I feel like that's probably what gets them on.
And the rankness and the usual disgust, crossing that boundary and being that subversive for many people is the turn on.
Yeah.
I think the dildo could work in a number of ways. For a start, it could fulfil that idea of being a quickie thing.
Yeah.
It could also be an entry-level experimental project for somebody who is maybe thinks they might enjoy that, but they're not sure.
Yeah.
Or it might be a way of a partner who isn't into scat but wants to try and fulfill their
lovers.
It's
almost like a compromise.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Something there
exactly. It's something visual.
Yeah.
But I also think they might sell a lot of those for stag do's and as novelty items.
I feel like that's where they're getting a lot of the money on that one.
Yeah. In fact, I must take mine into my office and just leave it around and see what happens.
All right. Let's have a little bit of the Crips. Did they cut off to choose? Did they cut wear brown shoes? Did they not ever have to read about this in the news? You're gonna have a go. Well, I don't want to know. I just thought that I should try and say hello to those who never exist without being generic. You like to impress. I'd fall right for, but you never exist. If you wasn't generic, you like to impress. I'd fall right for, but I'll never forget how all this began. And I will never regret a thing I have done, but you would never exist without us. So maybe I do not have the time. Farewell, the friends of mine. A year's a long time, you're doing nothing with your life. I heard you felt alert. Oh, I'm hoping that it hurt. Cause we've spent too much time in grammar to be glad to the dirt by those who never
Radio presents
Ian Boltzler. We're joined by Harriet Thorpe.
I'm very lucky because I trained at the Royal Ballet School,
before my tits got too big. Right. They were never, never getting in a tutu, darling. It was never going to happen.
Could you not? Could you really not?
No, darling. Not without ropes and pulleys
she
and several strong
with
people.
She struggles with that.
I know. It's a
well, I wouldn't get in a tutu. I know that.
No, it's
no,
you would, can't.
Well, no, we could get in. We wouldn't stay in the tutu.
No, exactly.
We?
Thank you.
They'd be popping out.
Yes, you would. It's a different kind of show. Thank you. Moving on.
I would watch Swan Lake if everyone was falling out in a tutu. And not even in a sexy way. I think I'd just find it funny.
You want to join us?
I'll do it.
Yeah, there you go.
Every Monday.
Ian Boltzworth.
From 2 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
So now we are joined on the phones by screenwriter Joe Barton. How are you doing, Joe?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, how's it going?
Good, really, really good. I'm here in the studio with Alex Fox.
Hey, Joe.
Hi, Alex.
So you're a screenwriter and you have a particular passion for queer cinema. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, I've got a film called My Days of Mercy. It's playing in the BFI Flare Festival tomorrow. Yeah.
Yes, that's tonight, I believe. It's opening the BFI Flare, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, opening it.
And is that a queer movie itself?
It is, yeah, it is. It stars Ellen Page and Kate Mara, two women that meet each other, fall in love, have a relationship. So, yes, very much LGBT.
That's amazing. And I think as well, like, right now, I feel like we're in this kind of culture where we have so many of these amazing queer movies emerging. I mean, we had Moonlight, which was obviously incredible for representation, winning the Oscars, and you know, we've had Call Me By Your Name and Love, Simon coming out soon, and I think it now is and Carol a couple of years ago, and I think now is a really great time for kind of queer movies emerging. What do you think, like, why are you particularly passionate about queer cinema, and why do you think it's so kind of important that we have these movies kind of filling up these spaces?
Well, I mean representation across any medium is incredibly important. I think we've seen, like you say, just some really amazing films, and we've seen over the last couple of years that people have had an opportunity to make stories that have been more diverse, and more diverse audiences have had an opportunity to see themselves reflected on the screen, which is always, you know, just, I think it's incredibly important, whether it's LGBT or whether it's people of colour, you know, see sort of big Hollywood movies like Black Panther or A Wrinkle in Time and doing that. I think it's undeniably important and vital for people to see themselves reflected on screen. I you know, My Days of Mercy is the first sort of, I suppose, purely LGBT film that I've done. I've had gay characters in other films and TV shows I've written. I keep, you know, plan to do it going forward as well. I think it's just about reflecting the world back as it is, you know, as people see it. I think it's always an important thing.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people kind of lack almost an appreciation for how little representation we often see. You know, when Black Panther, like you mentioned, came out, like the amount, like seeing just on Twitter and online the communities forming over this movie and people really coming together and bonding, because for the first time they're really seeing themselves on screen. And I think for a lot of people, you know, that's, you know, a lot of people don't really appreciate how important it is. I mean, you know, growing up myself, watching, you know, your Disney movies and things like that, and never, you know, always kind of seeing the heterosexual love story, I don't think people kind of realize how isolating that can be, and really confusing. I think a lot of people say, you know, we shouldn't be making all these queer movies because it's gonna confuse people, but I think if anything it's more confusing for a kid growing up LGBT plus and not seeing themselves represented.
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, or just seeing them as marginalized, or seeing themselves as just sort of comedy sidekick sometimes. Lots of people have been talking about a film called Love, Simon this week, which is, you know, sort of great teen movie which has an LGBT relationship front and center, whereas, you know, it's an amazing movie, but something like Mean Girls, you know, that the gay character was the comic relief almost in that. So yeah, it's great, I think, and it's good that studios and places can see that these films can make money and be successful. You know, Black Panther, hugely successful, and in the, you know, Moonlight won the Oscar last year, and so I think it's only going to get better going forward, hopefully.
Absolutely, and I think if we look back at kind of LGBT plus representation across the past couple of decades, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the show Friends, which obviously when it came out, there was a lot of kind of. There is LGBT plus representation in Friends, but it's often that the LGBT plus people are the butt of the joke.
People
almost.
Are looking back now at Friends with new eyes, aren't they? And really reassessing that. Although I think in its time, elements of Friends were considered kind of progressive, just even acknowledging that you could be pals with someone who was LGBT plus was nudging things forward. I was thinking, as you were discussing there, Joe, the idea of the roles that LGBTQ folks used to be cast in. And I remember a lot of 90s movies, particularly teen movies, with that kind of gay best friend trope. And I look back at when I was kind of 18, 19, when some of my friends started to come out. And I think a lot of them felt like the only way that they could be accepted and almost the kind of expected way for them to express their sexuality was by fitting into that very, very restricted definition of what a socially acceptable gay person looked like.
Yeah. And I suppose, if you lived in a place where there weren't very many other, you know, LGBT people like you, then you were kind of getting your signifiers from the TV and film, you know, if you weren't growing up in London or Brighton or places like that. So it was sort of like, well, how should you act? And then you see gay characters being represented on TV and film in a certain way. I'm sure, you know, that's people probably did sort of feel like, well, that's how I should be, even if that isn't, you know, how you naturally are, you know.
This is quite a different kind of vibe, I guess, but a little while ago I saw a French film called 120 Beats Per Minute, which was a study of French activists' resistance to the way that French healthcare systems and governmental systems in the 90s reacted to what was then a huge AIDS crisis. And a lot of that film was painful and so upsetting to see, but important to witness. But one of the things I loved about it was that it unflinchingly, unapologetically, beautifully had some really sustained scenes of men sleeping with men. The camera didn't pull away at the point of penetration. It wasn't shot in a way where it hinted that sex happened. It was portrayed in exactly the same way that a sexy film about cis straight people would be. And I found it really, really refreshing. My fear, though, however, is that the people who would really benefit from seeing a film like that probably won't see it in the cinema. But that's why it's exciting that films like yours are heading up festivals and people are talking about Call Me By Your Name, and folks who maybe aren't part of the queer community are seeing the cinema and taking it seriously.
I think sometimes as well, I think it's kind of like touching upon these like really deep, difficult, often controversial issues, like films about HIV and AIDS, for instance, it allows you to make your characters very, very human and fragile and vulnerable. And I remember even before I came out, I watched a wonderful LGBT plus movie called Philadelphia with Tom Hanks. And it's about him living with HIV and kind of going through that process. And seeing my father cry at that movie was a real moment for me, because he was watching an LGBT plus character and really seeing them as human and really connecting to them and really having that emotional response. And that in itself said to me, you know, oh, it's okay to be gay. I'm still a human. And I think as well, like seeing lots of different LGBT plus characters in all different settings. You know, we have LGBT plus presidents in TV shows now. And I think it's really important that we see lots of different examples of people. So it's not I'm gay, how am I supposed to act? It's I'm gay and that's a part of me, and I can act and be whoever I want to be.
Yeah, there are more options. Joe, I'm intrigued. Perhaps this is maybe not your specialism, so forgive me if I'm barking up the wrong tree here, but Callum mentioned Disney films earlier, and there has been quite a debate about the potential that Elsa's character in Frozen is going to come out as a lesbian and have a female partner in the next movie. I wonder what your thoughts are about writing queer films for younger audiences.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's a good thing to have films for younger audiences that deal with LGBTQ plus issues. Absolutely. I mean, there's been, I guess, kind of lip service to it. There was a character who was maybe going to be gay in the Beauty and the Beast film that came out a couple of years ago, and you know, there's been lots of talk about, is Dumbledore gay or not? Well, you know, sort of J.K. Rowling say Dumbledore's gay, but then people getting upset that it's not going to be sort of dealt with in the films. And I think it could even be a good thing for the reasons that we were talking about. You know, I don't think, you know, no one's really born homophobic, and no one's, you know, that's something that people are, I suppose, taught throughout their lives, and it probably starts quite early. And I think, you know, the more we can show young kids that there's a, you know, spectrum of different ways of being, and there's no one right or wrong way, and that includes gay rights, that includes, you know, the colour of our skin, you know, how we dress, who we are, where we live, but et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing wrong with getting that in early, I think, in a sort of, you know, appropriate way for a children's movie.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a lot more inclusivity in children's movies now. You know, like Disney seem to be making a lot more effort to be inclusive of, you know, people from different backgrounds. They're setting a lot of their movies from all over the world now, you know, trying to be as inclusive as possible. And I think just taking that a little step further and including LGBT plus people is really, really important, and it will make an enormous difference.
How do we all feel about non-LGBTQ plus actors playing queer roles?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? It's sort of a growing debate. And you mentioned Philadelphia, obviously Tom Hanks is not gay, but, you know, was incredible in that film. But possibly in a time where I don't think there were particularly many out gay actors who have been able to do the role. I don't know. You know, we've got Ellen Page is obviously in my film, but also Kate Mara, and they both play lesbians. And I think it's important when you're doing, you know, you're telling a story about a community or a culture or something that isn't your own, to do it respectfully and sensitively and with understanding. I think you don't want to get to the point where you're actively avoiding casting people from the communities that you're putting on screen. You know, there's been a lot of talk about it with disabled characters, like Eddie Redmayne playing Stephen Hawking, or I don't know, sort of trans characters, I suppose, Jared Leto or whoever. It's a difficult one. It's a really difficult one, and maybe it should be taken on a case-by-case basis, but I suppose ideally you want a world where, you know, gay actors can play straight and gay, straight actors can play straight and gay. You want all of that. But you know, traditionally the big problem has been actors have felt that if they come out, it's going to damage their chances of playing straight roles on screen as well. And that's, you know, something else that should be addressed. I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think it's a complex issue.
It is complex. Then there's people like James Franco, aren't there, who kind of flirt with the idea of hinting that they might they might be queer. And, yeah, exactly. And I get the feeling that they're sort of trying to do that to be edgy.
I really, really like it when people, I feel like, go above and beyond to be inclusive. And I think, you know, in the best possible world, you would have so many LGBT plus characters being portrayed by LGBT plus actors. And I think an amazing example of this was Orange is the New Black on Netflix. I've forgotten the actress's name now. She plays the transgender character.
I was absolutely hooked on that show for ages, and I'm drawing a mental blank
but
as well
I think
now.
The most wonderful thing about it was they had this kind of dilemma, because they wanted her to play this transgender character, but they also wanted to tell her backstory. And in doing so, they needed to show her before she transitioned. And they thought it would be incredibly problematic to ask this transgender woman.
Laverne Cox.
Laverne Cox. They thought it would be incredibly problematic to ask a transgender woman, you know, to kind of act out her life pre-transition. So what they did was they asked her twin brother to play that role. And I think...
Is that how you played it?
Huh? Yeah. I didn't know that.
And I don't think many people know that. And I think that's just an amazing example of going above and beyond to kind of be as inclusive as possible. But on the flip side of that, I guess, you know, not everybody has kind of access to your Ellen Page, for instance. Getting her for the role in this movie must have been particularly difficult.
Well, I mean, it wasn't in a way. I mean, I'd written the script. So I've written the script sort of 9 years ago, the first draft of it, and it was just sort of sitting around. And it actually ended up going to her. We were at the same agency, and after she came out, her and Kate wanted to make a film together, and Ellen was sort of actively looking for more LGBT characters that she could play. And my agent had this script, in a drawer somewhere, and her agent sort of was going around, I'm looking for a project with these themes. So it just got passed from one agent to the other. And when that happened, her and Kate came on sort of straight away, really, after a quick rewrite. Once it had gotten to her, it was quite a quick process, and they produced it as well. That having actors like that attached to your project does speed up the process quite a lot, definitely.
I'm trying to be cool, but it's really not working. I'm really excited about this film, and I love Ellen Page, and oh God, I would not be able to talk about this in such a chill manner as your managing Joe. I would be wibbling and flapping all over the place about how exciting this is.
No, I am. It's been really surreal, actually, since the whole process of getting it made and having them in it. And the weird thing was, I'd written it just after Juno had come out, and I'd seen Ellen in that, and I'd been sort of a massive fan of hers. And she'd been doing interviews and talking about this, you know, sort of paucity of good roles for actresses in Hollywood. And it was partly sort of hearing her talk about that made me want to. I hadn't written very many screenplays at that time, so I was like, oh, I should. I realized I hadn't written one with a female protagonist in, and it was so partly from listening to her talk post Juno. That was one of the sort of reasons I actively sort of went out and I wasn't going to write something with a female protagonist. So to have her actually sort of starring in it, however many years later, it's been very strange, but yeah, exciting.
Well, Joe, it's been absolutely amazing chatting to you. The film is called My Days of Mercy, and it is opening BFI's London Flair LGBT Plus Festival tonight. And I think it's really, really important that people support this movie and just in general support LGBT Plus movies everywhere. You know, I think that's one thing I think sometimes we often fail to do. We talk about the importance of representation, and then we kind of forget to go and, you know, buy the cinema ticket.
Do you know what I do as well? And this is going to make me sound like I'm being a self-indulgent wanker here, but when I went to see Black Panther, I noticed that there was horrible outpouring of racism from certain people on Twitter. So I spent the same price as a cinema ticket, affordable for a lot of people, although not all, I recognise that, but I bought a second ticket for a charity that helps black kids get into cinema and get into acting. And I'm going to go and see your film, Joe, and I'm also going to donate the price of a ticket to the LGBT Foundation. I just
find
it's
a wonderful idea.
Well, it's a small thing. It's like bringing a pal, really, but your pal is a charity. And I find doing things like that, it's a really easy way of doing something that kind of pays it forward when you get to see great cinema like that.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I'll do the same thing. That's a lovely idea.
I'm going to do the same as well. I think we're all in agreement.
We'll all do it.
Oh, fabulous. I am a wanker sometimes as well, though. I also do deeply evil, horrible things. Like try and kiss people after eating mouthfuls of Monster Munch. So, yeah.
The worst crime. The very worst.
Well, you've been a pleasure to talk to, Joe. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye. What an angel.
And what an a massive achievement.
Yeah, an enormous achievement. And I think there needs to be more appreciation for how much time and effort and passion goes into these things. And just,
I feel a bit dumb as well because I don't know all about Joe's back catalogue. So I'm going to go and check out his other screenplays and his work. And it's exciting, though, isn't it, when you discover someone that is new to you and then you get to go and dig around in the archives and see their journey and see the things that they've created. It's
absolutely
really exciting.
Absolutely. So many talented people out there. And yeah,
I should say if anyone fancies going and digging in my archives, actually, do you know, I went at the weekend. I went to an event called Eroticon, which is a 2-day gathering organised by an amazing sex blogger called Girl on the Net.
Yes,
where people who write and speak and communicate about sex in a sex positive manner get together to do some workshops and swap ideas and promote what works and what doesn't. It's really grassroots and community based, and it's brilliant. And one of the discussions there, which was it was a part of a panel talk with two sex educators called Justin Hancock. He's also known as Bish. He does a lot of sex ed stuff for young people, and a person called Meg John Barker, who's written an immense amount of fantastic books. Both of them do a lot of good work on helping people to communicate better with each other about what they want in a sexual relationship and kind of taking the pressure off about sex. But one of the questions that we tackled was, what happens when, as someone who tries to be woke, if you will, now, and I'm always learning and evolving about what I know about sex and my attitude and trying to educate myself, I've been writing for about 13, 14 years, and I am pretty sure that some of the things that I published as a younger, stupider, less informed, less enlightened person would probably make me cringe. And sometimes I'm quite fearful that now that everything lives forever on the internet,
how do you deal
with your history?
Exactly. It's out there. And I think people do need to have a little bit of kind of understanding that times do move. Like we were talking about the friends thing a little while ago. And I do think perhaps people were harshly criticizing it a little bit too much. Like I do understand that some of the jokes and things were slightly problematic.
Some haven't aged well.
They've not aged well, and that's the issue. We're coming at it with a very different mind frame now. We're all so much more educated, and
it is a bit of a call out culture, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's in a way it's something to be celebrated that the jokes that were made on Friends back in the day are not ones that any of those actors or any of the people who worked on that project, they wouldn't make those now.
Yeah,
it's not that they were bad people.
No,
it's just that attitudes weren't as enlightened and people didn't understand each other as much, I guess.
Absolutely.
So please forgive me, everybody listening, if you find anything. Do you know what the word... I'm quite upfront about one thing I know that I did that looks really bad, but it wasn't intended to. You ready for this, Callum?
I'm so ready.
I was DJing at a Christmas party, and it was kind of a fetish-themed party.
Okay.
And I really wanted to wear this black zip-up leatherette catsuit.
Sure.
I was too cheap to buy leather. It was... or we'll say vegan. But I didn't really know what to go as, and I was thinking, and then finally after lots of pissing around looking in my craft drawers and like trying things on and them not working, I hit on what I thought was a genius idea. What do naughty kids get in their stockings at Christmas?
Coal.
A piece of coal.
Sure.
So I thought, great, I'll go as a piece of coal in my black leatherette catsuit.
Oh.
I'll paint myself black. You can see where this is going.
Oh, no.
I backcombed my hair. I covered myself in black glitter. And I took a sack that I came out of, so it was clear that I was a piece of coal and
sure.
Like Brussels sprouts to throw at people.
But it
in my ignorance, I did not I didn't anticipate that this would not look politically correct.
Correct at all.
I should be absolutely clear. My intention was not to parody anybody with a different skin colour to me. I just made a real fucking balls up with the outfit. And by the time I clocked that things were not looking in reality like they did in my head, and that it wasn't immediately obvious that I was a piece of coal, and I did look like... At best, I looked like that scene in Zoolander when he's down at the mine.
Sure.
At worst, I looked like I was doing something hugely offensive that I would never do.
I think it's important that with these things that we look at people's intent. I think
still, though, intention is not the it's not an excuse.
It's not an excuse, but I think we can, like, maybe it's not my place to forgive you, but I would say in that situation, you know, your intent and your heart was in the right place. You weren't meaning to do something offensive, and you should absolutely never do that again.
No,
please never do that ever again.
No,
but you know, you weren't meaning to do bad, and I think that's what's important.
No bad intention, and the costume was in no way meant to be a parody, but. Good
That's
Lord,
how it, came
it
across.
Looks bad in photographs out of context. If you find those on the internet, people, please know.
Drag her.
Oh,
drag her.
Please don't.
All right.
Can we drag ourselves into a song?
Let's do it.
I was busy thinking about boys, boys, boys. I was busy dreaming about boys. Spinning, thinking about I need that bad boy to do me right on a Friday. And I need that good one to wake me up on a Sunday. That one from work can come over on Monday night. I want them all, I want them all. And when they finally leave me, I'm all alone, but I'm looking down at my girls, are blowing my phone up. Them 20 questions, they're asking me where I'm at. Didn't hit them back. I'm sorry that your party. I wish I had a better excuse. Like, I had to trash the hotel lobby. But I was busy thinking about boys, boys, boys. I was busy dreaming about boys, boys, boys. Head is spinning thinking about boys. Every city I got one with different ringtones. Flying I wish I had a better excuse. Like, I can't even lie, you got me. I was busy thinking about boys.
This question a lot. I think making it go away by banning it is not a sensible or possible approach.
Plausible. It just doesn't.
I think that there is good sex positive porn out there. I follow an amazing pornographer and activist called Pandora Blake, who's written quite extensively along with a lawyer called Miles Jackman about the proposals to bring in age verification for porn.
Okay.
So this means that you have to say how old you are if you wish to view porn on the net.
that in theory sounds like quite a good idea, because no one wants kids to see something that's inappropriate or that's too, you know, that's too full on before it's appropriate for their age. The issue is partly that the software required to for porn sites to install this age verification is very expensive.
Sure.
So now someone who looks like a hero has swept in and gone, don't worry, guys, I will give you this software on a graduated pay scale. Mm. So if you're a small, indie, queer porn site, for example, making ethical porn, you don't have a huge budget, you're trying to pay actors and production companies and everyone fairly, and you're not charging a huge amount for what you're doing because it's niche, or it's, you know, it's still getting a foothold in the market, we will charge you only a small amount for the age verification software. Sounds great, right?
Sounds great, but what's the sting in the tail?
Until you know that the company who are selling that software are MindGeek, who own Pornhub, and they are going to be collecting all the statistics on what people are watching and what's working and what's not. They've even wormed their way into advising the government on this, to my knowledge.
Wow.
So it's become... ethics and business have really gotten entangled. Plus, just on a more straightforward level, there are concerns about people's privacy. Should you have to prove
who
you are and what you're watching? The subject of pornography is not simple.
And I want to go a little bit controversial with my opinions on this and my opinions on the age verification thing in general. I appreciate the reason for it, and I appreciate why we say, you know, you have to be 18 years old to watch pornography. I really do appreciate that. But there are a lot of people out there, a lot of young people going to the internet to learn about sex. And yes, I agree that 99.9% of porn is not the best way to learn about sex. But it is a tool that I used growing up. And it was a tool that I used to kind of learn a lot about myself sexually. And I think, you know, not allowing somebody to access that at all until they reach the age of 18. They're already having sex by that age.
And they're already legally allowed to.
Yeah. It doesn't seem...
You just can't watch it.
And now you're probably going to think I'm absolutely outrageous for saying this, but I think if we were to age verify it, I 12... You know, I think young.
That is a controversial opinion.
It is.
Now I hear from a lot of educators and a lot of parents and a lot of people who think that lots of young folks are negatively affected by porn.
Yeah.
And I agree that in some cases, lots of cases, that's true. There's a really spectacular audio documentary by John Ronson called The Butterfly Effect, which tracks in great detail how the proliferation of porn becoming free has meant that the only things that people will pay for, or the only things that studios will pay for actors to make, are more and more hardcore. So you've got younger porn actors and actresses doing really extreme acts on camera because that's what they can get paid for, and then that is becoming
the norm.
Yeah, it's a very interesting domino effect. I think this proliferation of hardcore extreme porn without context on the net is almost undoubtedly damaging some people.
Yeah.
But I also agree with you that lots of people are looking at porn because they're not seeing realistic depictions of bodies or sex anywhere else.
Anywhere else,
If you're saying, we're not going to give you porn, you better be giving those young people
some decent, real
sex education that meets their needs. And that includes LGBTQ plus needs and trans needs and gender non-binary needs and realistic depictions of genitalia. Mm-hmm. I speak to so many young people and women, adult women and adult men, who have no idea what genitals look like and the spectrum of difference that's completely and utterly normal, and have worked themselves up so much about their bodies that it is endangering their well-being to a really, really hugely detrimental degree.
Yeah.
So I think it's all very well for people to preach about porn. Bring the good stuff then, you know?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And like, I just wish
can't
that
take
you know
away
you
without
could.
Giving.
I wish you could land on like a porn homepage and just see a real diverse range of pornography and inclusive pornography.
Yeah.
You know, that's showing all different types of people, whether that's the way their genitals look or their ethnic background or their sexuality or their gender, and all of these things should be included and it should be there. But I feel like when I land on the homepage of a porn site at the minute, what I'm kind of seeing is one type of porn, which tends to be just gay porn, obviously, for me, but like it would be white guys fucking white guys quite aggressively in one position, and that's kind of what you're seeing. And you know, sex is so more vast than that. And yes, there is amazing pornography out there, and there's amazing independent people making really incredible inclusive pornography.
They are up against it when it comes to being up against one another, though.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Absolutely,
it's hard to make films with people that are hard in them. Yeah. If you're trying to do something different. Yeah.
Well, that was a very serious discussion. So I think we're going to lighten things up a little bit here, Alex.
I just have one thing to say. Here she is. Well, it's interesting. Sex is often at the forefront of technology because where there is sex, there is money, usually.
Yeah.
And so have you watched any virtual reality porn, any VR porn?
I haven't. I'm very intrigued.
I have. I had an Oculus Rift headset on.
Wow.
But because most of what's being produced in VR is trying to do what's saleable, which is that mainstream white person fucking white person stuff. All that was available to me at the time was a point of view film of a white guy fucking white woman. But it meant that I got to pretend that I had a dick in this film. And I actually recommend anyone who doesn't have a dick, try some VR porn. You can get yourself a wonderfully unsexy Google cardboard headset. You can make them yourself at home for about, I think they're about £2 or £3, and you put your smartphone in the front of them. And there is some free, I think you should pay for your porn and support the industry, the positive parts of the industry anyway. But there is free VR porn out there on places like Pornhub. Just experiment. Go and see what it's like to have sex as in a body that's different to yours. It's really intriguing.
I would be really interested to kind of like as a person with a penis, I'd be quite interested to experience sex with a vagina, you know. I would be really open to that and interested in that. So yeah, I think it's
only going to grow from here as well.
Yeah. Well, I've got a little treat for you, Alex. I have some clips here. Some of these are from porn.
You said clips there, not clits.
Got some clits for you. Some clips.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of these are from porn, and some of these are from, you know, those really sexy fragrance adverts. You know the ones. And I want you to figure out which are which.
Ooh. Is it cologne or is it coming? Wonderful.
Cologne or coming. Yeah. Right. Here's your first one.
That's very fast.
Very fast.
I really hope that that's a perfume ad, because otherwise it sounds like some kind of porn involving hamsters. It's very high pitched.
Yeah, I'm not.
Is that definitely playing correctly? let's twiddle the knobs.
I'll have a little twiddle with my knobs.
No.
Yeah, there we go. That's playing correctly.
It sounds like a panicked chipmunk.
Yeah, they've made it difficult this week for us.
To be fair, I have heard people make some really freaking strange noises in the throes of passion. I'm going to go with perfume.
Are you going to go? Yeah. I'm afraid you're incorrect.
Maybe I'm wearing really bad scents. Oh my god, what am I putting on myself?
No, that was from porn. That was from a lovely video called Point of View Fucked from Behind, Moaning Like Possessed. So maybe that's the possession we're hearing here.
It's the ghost of a dead roadkill chipmunk.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like that was very difficult.
Yeah.
All right, here's another one.
Definitely perfume.
I love definitely perfume. That's the opposite of what I thought you were going to say.
There's too much. It's the is too rhythmically involved with the music. It sounds like it's going to be part of a kind of high energy, kinetic.
It's
like
very well timed
and breathiness and buy this and spritz it all over yourself. Kind of yeah.
Yeah.
If that's porn, it's working.
Very
yeah,
well
it's
produced because
you
don't get very much porn, which has been kind of like big budget behind it. You know, where the music's timed with the moans. You don't get that.
There
very
really
often.
Should be a porn star called Big Budget. It's got a big budget
behind it. Entering
oh my god!
It
I'm sure there is. I'm sure yeah. there is actually.
Big budget. Well, the first one sounded like Big Budgie.
Well, you are absolutely correct. That was from a Paco Rabanne. Advert.
Here it Package is.
One more time. Yeah, I like it. I like it. I'm also seeing a bit of like a Taylor Swift music video. Is
yes.
what's
yeah,
what I'm seeing
what I
in
got
my
in
mind.
My head.
Yeah. All right. Here's your next one.
It's really hard to tell, isn't it? Again, I'm getting
Sounds
that music
spooky.
In the background.
Yeah. But they do have music in the background of porn. But it's usually that kind of. Dun, 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 dun.
It's dun, the dun, I've come dun, to dun, yeah, yeah I've come to fix your fridge.
There's always a plumber. There's always a plumber. Or this I mean again gay porn. Like there's always like a boy who's just had his heart broken, and then the stepdad.
Comforted
the stepdad always comes
so
in. Always the stepdad.
Porn, isn't
so
yeah.
much incest porn.
I've seen a lot of porn. You know when you kind of fall into a porn hole, for want of a better phrase,
yeah.
where you click on something and then it another
it recommends something else.
It never ends up being sexy for me. It ends up being weird and work.
The two, yeah.
I start off wanting a wank and I end up with weird and work.
Yeah.
I either end up asking a question and then wanting to journalistically research that, or I just go, that is the frickin' strangest thing I've ever seen. I've watched a lot of porn with women in bathtubs of eels.
Eels? Like,
yeah.
A lot of this porn.
A lot. Yeah. I used to get every month when I was at Bazaar, I used to get sent a double page article from a guy in Japan who specialised in making porn with women and insects and amphibians, so like
wow.
toads and snails and eels. I'm not even sure what
but
an
that,
eels class
but, I mean,
does. Sea life.
But that would be bestiality, even though I guess
yes.
You know, I guess
we pulled the pages in the end because it got increasingly uncomfortable. Things became a bit more sentient. And
I did once see a woman have sex with an octopus, and I felt very upset for the octopus.
Tentacle porn.
Because she was putting the entire octopus inside her, and then it was kind of like crawling out of her, and I was like, this doesn't seem like it's ethical.
I think if
ethical.
You're into that, there's some really good Japanese animations where
yeah,
by
go
no
that.
Animals were knowingly harmed. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Go for the cartoon rather than the actual octopod having a terrible time. Yeah.
Well, let's
play me that clip again.
Here you go.
Now I'm wondering if it could be porn.
I'm just hearing ghosts is what I'm hearing. I'm seeing a haunted castle.
Yeah,
seeing,
I'm hearing Halloween as
yeah.
well.
Could be a Halloween-themed porno, you know?
Well, I'm crossing my fingers for porn because it sounds really interesting, but I'm going to go with perfume on the basis of the soundtrack.
Absolutely correct, it is. It is from Yves Saint Laurent fragrance advert. Not sure what's happening. Maybe it was Halloween-themed. not really sure. All right, your next one.
What am I doing?
Oh, surely porn. Surely porn. Because now it's going to be, oh, I'm just like bending over this sofa and rearranging the cushions innocently.
I thought this, I heard like, wait, let's hear it again.
What am I doing?
I was hearing like one of those really bad, it's like where they do like a fake audition tape.
Oh,
they're
so
awful.
Much
casting
that,
couch,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Oh God, those couches have seen things.
Oh, they have.
They dream of their life back at DFS. They were innocent and unsmited, yeah, unsullied by the terrors that took place. They're always like worryingly wiped clean pleather.
Yeah,
aren't they?
You don't want that.
What am I doing?
What am I doing?
She sounds. She has an accent. I'm also seeing like French maid kind of thing. Oh, what am I doing? Like she's got a little duster out.
Also, listen to the echo on her in her voice. So many porns are kind of shot in those those beach houses look like they've been rented out for the day. There's not a lot of soft furnishings and stuff in there. So there's that very particular echo of a wipe clean floor. You know, everything's tiled.
Yes.
So their voice has that effect. Oh my God, I know too much about pornography.
Yeah, it does
the
have
specific
the porn
acoustics
echo.
Of porn. I think this has...
Listen for the echo.
What am I doing?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely, definitely does.
I'm just polishing this very easy to clean surface.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and here's the stepdad.
Yeah. Oh, here's the pizza boy.
Here's the.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that series of porn that is the old fashioned trope of the pizza guy ding donging on the doorbell and then getting ravished by ladies? But this one is, I think it's called Big Dick Pizza or Big Penis
Big
Pizza
Dick
or something.
Pizza.
Something,
wow.
It's something really straightforward like that,
yeah.
You know, where it does what it says on the tin. But they've cut a hole in the bottom of the box.
No.
And when the girls open the pizza box,
his dick is just kind of there.
Schlong right on top of the pepperami, yeah. They're just sitting there amid your deep pan. Stuffed crust on a whole new level.
I reckon I would enjoy that. Just a little, little.
I worry. Wouldn't it burn?
Oh yeah, hot cheese,
hot
tomato sauce,
hot cheese on your gonads.
Oh,
yowzers!
You're right. Oh, not
little
yeah.
Little bits of olive stuck under your foreskin.
Oh no, pleasant. Not pleasant.
No.
So, are we saying this is porn or not porn?
I think porn.
Absolutely correct. It is from She's Crafty and She's Just My Type.
She's what crafty. What am I doing? I'm basket weaving. Come join me in the nude. Bum me while I do this cross stitch.
Bum me. I've not heard that in such a long time.
Neither have I.
Such a visceral teenage thing to say, isn't it?
Bum me.
Bum me.
I didn't really ask many people to bum me as a teenager.
No, me neither. Not going to lie.
It was more like, just go and brush your teeth, please.
All right, here's your final one.
She's crafty.
Ooh. Oh. Well, it's like the first one all over again, isn't it?
It sounds like there could be the workings of a camera in there. Does it sound like a camera mechanism whirring?
Yeah, it could be.
Which
could be a lot
me,
of things.
You know that those perfume adverts where there's a model with like rushing through the streets and the
paparazzi
after
going.
Them. Yeah, yeah. And then someone from the press asks them an obscure question. They go, I do not want to answer that. All I want to do is be alone and sweat myself. These wonderful icons. Yeah. I think it might be perfume.
Oh, Alex. You were doing so well. You were smashing through
them.
Oh,
play it me again. I need to hear the
sex. It's from porn. Yeah, I mean...
it could be a lip smacking.
You weren't giving a lot. It was captivating redhead pleases hard cock. I mean, you weren't giving a lot, to be fair, though.
No.
Not a lot to work with. I'm sure the redhead
wouldn't been
had
able,
more.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to tell the particular colour of the actor's follicles from that clip. You know what? If I could tell the colour of someone's hair by their sex sounds, then I would be on stage with Derren Brown.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, you've got a few surprises for me, Alex, and I'm very, very excited to see them.
I brought props.
But let's have a little bit of music first. So this is Sexy Motherfucker. Oh!
Sexy motherfucker.
We're all alone in a villa on the Riviera. Got some friends on the south side in case you cared. Out of all your friends, I wanna be the closest. That's why I tell you things who be the most. Is when it comes to life, to be this man's wife, you got to be well educated on the subject of fights. I mean the prevention of, in other words, it's our real meaning of this thing called love. Are you up on this? If something you can get up with a hug and a kiss. Come here, baby.
You sexy motherfucker.
Come here, baby. Yeah.
You sexy motherfucker.
We need to talk about things. Tell me what you do. Tell me what you eat. I might cook for you. See, it really don't matter, cause it's all about me and you. Ain't no one else around. I'm even with the blindfold gagged and bound. I don't mind. This ain't about sex, it's all about love. Being in charge of this life and the next. Why all the cosmic talk? I just want you smarter than I'll ever be when we take that walk. Come here, baby.
sexy motherfucker.
Come here, baby.
You sexy motherfucker.
Horn, stand up, please.
Talking about your shit-shaped dildo.
I really wondered where earlier. You were getting that. We were talking about your bowel movements, Alex.
And you've brought a couple of other surprises for me, haven't you? I'm really excited about this.
I'm a very, very lucky lady. I get gifted lots of new sexual toys and products and lubes and goo and goodness knows what. To be honest, sometimes I'm going to sound very spoilt here, but sometimes it almost feels like an obligation or an obligation, if you will. I get sent so many sex toys that I don't physically have the time and or strength of foof to get through them all in a week.
Sure.
But I've bought some choice new items.
Okay, I'm very excited for this.
I'm going to try and describe this via radio. What I have here is, it looks sort of like
It looks like one of those from the old days, what you'd keep, like a thermos.
Yes, it looks like a flask, right? Yeah. So it's made of...
Oh, good sounds, ASMR.
Yeah, can you tell? it does. It looks like a chunky sort of stubby flask, doesn't it? And it's a teal colour. If I open this up for you...
Oh, what's in there? Oh, this is very exciting.
What inside is... It looks like a giant, I reckon, kind of... I'm just undoing the bubble wrap. Sort of like a giant teal-coloured pill or something,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking at this object and I've no idea what it does or what it's for, but I'm very excited.
Oh, we also have another item in here.
Oh, what on earth is going on?
A piece of orange string that kind of looks like what would attach to your dad's trimmer for him to trim the hedges in the summer.
Yeah. Am I supposed to figure out how I'm supposed to use this?
What I would like you to tell me, Callum, is what you think this green rod, this thermos-type thing and this piece of orange string
are used
how
for.
How do you combine this trio of items to produce something sexy?
Oh, so the thermos-type thing is also part of it?
Yes. Oh. It's not just a storage canister. It has a different usage. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I feel like... Is the string for, like... Do you tie the string to the phallic object and then put the phallic object in and then, like, use the string to... Is it like a weird DIY
tampon?
No, I was going to say, is it like a weird douche or something?
That's not a bad guess.
Do you see where I'm going with that? Yeah. Where rather than using liquid, you're using a solid object.
Well, speaking of liquid, you're not too far off what you said when you referred to a thermos. What would you put inside a thermos?
Coffee. You're putting coffee in there.
Or hot liquid.
Right.
So what you do is you fill this tin tub with hot water. You put this rod inside. It's called a dodil, like a mixed up dildo, because it's a dildo that you can mix up. You put it in the hot water. You pop the lid on.
This is insanity.
It softens up.
No.
And then you use the string to tie around it, and it helps it form into different shapes. So you use the string to give it ridges or to give it a corkscrew effect. And then you let it cool. And you can reheat and repeat that as many times as you want. So it's a dildo that you can... use warmth to reform into whatever shape fits your body or your desires from time to time.
That is actually
cute,
incredible.
It?
That is genius.
I mean, in a way, we should maybe contact our porn girl who's particularly crafty, because this is right up her street. You know, it's crafts and it's pleasing your cuntaloons.
Yeah.
But I really like it. One aspect of this that I particularly appeals to me is that it's quite playful.
Yes.
It's something you could do with
together.
Your partner.
Like,
yeah,
oh,
it's kind of fun.
Yeah, like,
know?
Let's make this into a really fun shape that's going to be great pleasure for you, and then let's go through
and
that
let's
process.
Let's give it a go.
It's bringing a whole new element
a
to...
A whole new world for your holes. And I'm really into any kind of sex toy or sexual product that makes sex a bit less serious and a bit more funny, because I think there's so many people who feel immense pressure that sex always has to be a very serious...
And it doesn't. You know, it doesn't. Sex is supposed to be...
Performative affair. Well, it can be fun sometimes to be in that zone if you want to be. But there are other times where...
Mix it up.
Sex also can be hilarious. I don't know whether you've ever been the recipient of a queef incident as a gay guy.
I haven't. I'm sure
there are other things expelled from bodies that are comical, though, Callum. And sometimes you've just got to laugh. But also, laughing together can really help you relax and help you bond.
Totally. So I think things like the dodil, is it called?
The dodil, I think it sounds
just,
like an extinct animal, doesn't it?
It does.
Mourn the dodil.
I just think they're a great way to kind of bring new life into the bedroom.
That sounds like you're trying to get someone pregnant.
Sadly, that brings us to the end of our show.
Well, we have spoken about people's ends quite a lot.
But it does feel like just
the beginning. There's so much more we could explore.
If people want to find you and get involved with all of the wonderful sexual amazing things you do.
Please track me down. I am easy, horribly easy to find on the internet. I'm Alix with one eye, A-L-I-X, like Cyclops, one eye like Cyclops, and then Fox like the animal. So Alix Fox on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm not one of those very glossy social media people. I just kind of...
I love you. You're my favourite person on Twitter, honestly.
Oh, cheers. Yeah. I like a good pun.
Yeah, you do. You do. I enjoy it.
I laugh a lot every day. I actually... make it my point of life to try and laugh my head off at least five, like a proper belly laugh at least five times a day. And a lot of that is I broadcast. If something makes me giggle, then I'll put it on Twitter.
And it makes me giggle as well. And I'm sure it will make our lovely listeners giggle as well. So everybody should definitely go and
come
follow you.
Come and find me. If you've got any sexual questions that you want to ask me, then I can't do one-on-one stuff, but I do invite people to submit their queries to the Modern Man podcast. And
amazing.
I can often answer them there. I'm often looking for people to test sex toys or to get involved with debates. Or there's lots of opportunities to get hands on with me, if you will.
Way.
So come track me down, say hello.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to end this little show with a bit of Everything, Everything.
My favourite band. I love them more than everyone, everyone.
Well, this is just for you, Alix.
Cheers, dears.
Grenade.